This is the Polish Radio Warsaw. In defense of peace.
Of August 1948. The Assembly Hall of the local University of Technology, the World Congress of Intellectuals, is opened by the eminent Polish writer Jarosław Iwaszkiewicz.
Niepokój o świat cały i o jego losy przyprowadził was tutaj. Niepokój o nasze...
Concern for the future of the entire world has brought you here. Concern for your homes, belongings, affairs. Concern for culture.
Present in the hall are scientists, writers and artists from all over Europe, the two Americas, Asia and Africa.
It was only 3 years since atomic bombs had been dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. 1948 was a difficult year. Many historians see it as the opening of the Cold War. The climate of international relations had been worsening with each passing month. And there was increasing talk about a third world war.
And it was in such times that the World Congress of Intellectuals assembled in Wrocław on the initiative of Poland. The French columnist, André Wurmser, wrote then in the Sessoir,
planes departed from the world's capital for a city which had become Polish once again. There is not a college or university, not a single branch of science, which would not be represented in Wrocław. The voice which will emanate from that city will be the voice of spokesmen for all cultured nations endangered by the division of the world.
A huge ring and circled globe with inscriptions in four languages was the symbol of the debates. Its miniatures with silver arrows were put up on streets and crossings to help the delegates find their way about the still gravely destroyed city in which life had been brought more or less to normal.
Over 500 scientists, artists, writers, musicians, and cultural leaders had arrived in Wrocław. The Polish group included scientists Kazimierz Ajdukiewicz, Ludwik Hirschfeld, writers and poets Maria Dąbrowska, Zofia Naukowska, Władysław Broniewski, Jarosław Iwaszkiewicz, Julian Turwin, conductor Grzegorz Fitelberg, mathematicians Wacław Sierpiński and Hugo Steinhaus, the sociologist Józef Hałasiński. Among the foreign delegates were the Congress chairman Irena Joliot-Curie, Pablo Picasso, the British biologist, Julian Huxley, the Danish writer, Martin Andersen Nexø, and the Brazilian writer Jorge Amado. A group of artists and columnists from the United States, Soviet writers, among them Mikhail Shorohov, German and Czechoslovak writers, Italian professors, intellectuals from Latin America, China, Vietnam, India, Algeria, and Madagascar.
The debates lasted 3 days. The concluding resolution of the Congress, adopted by an overwhelming majority, emphasized the growing responsibility of intellectuals to nations and mankind and contained an appeal to set up a social movement in the defense of peace of worldwide scope. The text of the resolution was read to the delegates by the Polish columnist Jerzy Borejsza.
Kongres protestuje przeciw korzystaniu z nauki dla celów niszczenia i wzywa do zmobilizowania wszystkich sił.
The Congress protests against science being used for destruction and calls to rally all forces around the cause of promulgating knowledge throughout the world, and to employ the means supplied by science for combating poverty, backwardness, diseases, and shortcomings which plague millions.
Not all who were invited arrived at the Wrocław Congress. Józef Wieniewicz, the future Polish deputy foreign minister, thus recalls his meeting with Albert Einstein in the spring of 1948 at Princeton.
Z Albertem Einsteinem odbyłem dwie długie rozmowy w Princeton.
The meeting took place in the first floor bedroom, Einstein was ill then, which was furnished with Spartan frugality. The only object which I recall was an old violin hanging over the bed. And of course I still vividly recall that grey head with disordered hair, those deeply set eyes, but piercing and strangely gay. Einstein was resting on large pillows placed against the metal railing of an old-fashioned bed. The idea appealed to him. He understood why Poland had launched such a project. You see, he said, I am a vagabond. If I had stayed in Germany, those Nazi gangs would have finished me off in a concentration camp. If I had stayed as an emigre in Switzerland, they would speak of me as one of those scientists, refugees, living somewhere and drawing something in the black vault. I am here in the States now, provided with ideal facilities for pursuing my scientific work. But I feel like a bird in a golden cage. With the international tension we have now, they will not allow me to go anywhere. My head, full of important formulas, is especially precious to those who have launched the atomic arms race.
The great scientist, Albert Einstein, even though he could not come to Poland, fully understood why it was precisely Poland which had come up with such an initiative. The Poles are a nation who know all too well what atrocities and sufferings war brings. Wars have swept across this land twice in the life of a single generation. The last, the most bloodiest, started on the 1st of September 1939 at 4:45 a.m. on the Baltic coast at Westerplatte and lasted for 2,078 days. A German reporter covering the events of those days.
Niemand weiß von der ganzen was in dieser Stunde geschieht. In aller Stille.
Everything had been prepared in complete silence. The Poles have rejected the Führer's ultimatum, so the guns are now torpedoed. The battleship Schleswig-Holstein is shelling Westerplatte. The first Polish radio communicates. This is Warsaw calling an all Polish radio regional station. This morning at 5:40, German units crossed into Poland, thus violating the non-aggression pact. A number of towns have been bombed. The 3rd of September, British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain delivers a short radio address.
I am speaking to you in the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government the final note, stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany.
Britain is joined by France, and Warsaw rejoices. We are not alone. In the excitement of the moment, forgotten is the fact that it was the lack of decision and the manner in which the politicians of those countries had submitted to Hitler's successive demands which had substantially contributed to the outbreak of the Second World War. The president of Warsaw, Stefan Starzynski, thus assessed the situation in a radio program. Yesterday, the Germans fired 10 wagons of ammunition on Warsaw. They can fire 10 times more, but they will not take our capital. The promised assistance will arrive any day now. England hears us and will not leave us to our chance. We are not fighting alone. And anyway, even if I were to die, and many, many others, the fight has to be continued to the end.
Yet, in spite of the guarantees and the assurances of aid, Poland had to fight alone. The 27th of September, the last Polish radio communique.
Halo, halo, czy nas słyszycie? To nasz ostatni komunikat. Dziś oddziały niemieckie wkroczyły do Warszawy. Braterskie
pozdrowienie... Halo, halo, do you hear? Today, German units entered Warsaw. We convey fraternal greetings to Polish troops fighting on the Hel Peninsula and to all those who are still fighting wherever they may be. Poland is not dead yet. Long live Poland.
Of all the nations of the anti-Nazi coalition, the Poles fought the longest and on all the battle fronts of the Second World War. In the occupied country, an armed struggle was launched by underground organizations. The ranks of the resistance units grew steadily. Beyond the borders of the country, the Poles fought alongside their allies, in France and in Norway, in the air and at sea, in Libya and on Soviet territory. Polish troops later took part in the liberation of Europe. At stake was the freedom of nations and social justice. At home, it is also a fight for the biological survival of the nation. In Poznań, annexed by Hitler into the Third Reich, Goebbels proclaimed the Nazi credo.
Nicht mehr ein Volk von Dichtern und Träumern und Romantikern, sondern ein Volk, das ganz genau weiß.
We are no longer the nation of poets, romantics, and dreamers, but a nation which knows very well what it wants. A nation which encompasses 100 million people. And that 100 million is fighting for its rights.
These rights and that fight is clearly defined in documents. As early as the 31st of October 1939, the Governor General Hans Frank issued a regulation founded on paragraph 5 of decree number 1 issued by the Führer and the Chancellor of the Reich on administrating occupied Polish land. This reads in part.
Paragraph 1. One who commits an act of violence against German superior authority perpetrated in the general government will face the death penalty. Paragraph 2. One who willfully damages installations of the German authorities, objects used by the German authorities, or public utility installations will face the death penalty. Paragraph 3. One who urges or encourages disobedience to regulations issued by the German authorities will face the death penalty. Paragraph 4. One who makes an attempt on a German for reasons of his belonging to the German nation will face the death penalty. Paragraph 5. One who willfully sets on fire and by doing so damages the property of a German will face the death penalty. Paragraph 6. The abettor and his assistant will be punished on the same terms as the perpetrator of the crime, and an attempted crime will be punished as if it had been accomplished.
Such was the German law on occupied Polish land. It was enforced through a system of street roundups, arrests, and executions, and the death count. Each single day of the war brought an average toll of 3,000 Polish dead. Let us recall, there were 2,078 such days.
The Wrocław Congress of Intellectuals urged the creation of national peace defense committees throughout the world. In 6 months, that movement had expanded to such a degree and had matured to such an extent that it was possible to convene the first World Congress of Peace Defenders in April 1949.
This Congress, to which 2,005 delegates arrived from 72 countries, was held simultaneously in Paris and France. This was because not all delegates received entry visas to France.
At its session in Stockholm, the Standing Committee of the World Congress of Peace Defenders resolved to launch in all countries a mass signature-collecting campaign to an appeal condemning atomic weapons. Over 500 million persons signed the appeal.
The autumn of 1950, the international situation became aggravated even further. Fighting had been going on for several years in Indochina, and now a new war broke out which threatened imminent explosion into a world-scale conflict, the Korean War.
The peace movement in the world was now faced with new tasks to bring the world back from the brink of annihilation.
Such was the background to the opening of preparations for the Second World Congress of Peace Defenders. At first, it was to have been convened in Italy. The Italian government refused permission for its staging, so it was decided to hold it in Britain, in Czechia.
But this too proved impossible. In the end, the Congress assembled in Warsaw on the 16th of November 1950 in the hall of the main Warsaw printing shop. 2,005 delegates from 72 countries, a figure identical to that at the first Congress, opened their debate.
The Second World Congress of Peace Defenders adopted by an overwhelming majority the manifesto to the nations of the world and the appeal to the United Nations Organization. The appeal contained such postulates as:
withdrawing from Korea all foreign troops and putting an end to American intervention in Taiwan and that of the French in Vietnam. Demilitarizing Germany and Japan. Putting a halt to colonialism and racism. Defining the notion of aggression as a criminal act. The adoption by all parliaments of a law on peace. The examination by the United Nations and the World Parliament of the proposal to prohibit mass annihilation of weapons. Abolishing trade barriers and contact between states. Developing cultural relations among nations.
Such were the main decisions of the Warsaw Congress.
The Second World Congress granted peace prizes. The Grand Honorary Award went to the Polish capital, Warsaw, which, as it was termed then, had become a symbol of the victory of life over destruction. It was also in Warsaw that the slogan, "Never Again War," was born. Not a very large country. In terms of population, it is 19th in the world, and in terms of territory, the 61st. We had to work hard to attain the current place on the list of the world's 10 most industrialized nations. We know the price that had to be paid for that effort, and we do not wish to start all over again. This is why Poland's foreign policy is essentially one of peace. It is a policy aimed at protecting the world from war, from total annihilation. This was referred to by Edward Gierek in his speech in the Sejm, the Polish Parliament, on July 22, 1974, during a special session marking the 30th anniversary of People's Poland.
Najważniejszą potrzebą naszego narodu, wszystkich narodów całej ludzkości, jest pokój. Wszystkie...
Peace is the most urgent need of our nation, of all humanity. Every action of our state on the international scene is subordinated to the pursuance of that objective. We are proud of the fact that the socio-political image of People's Poland and her foreign policy placed the Polish nation among the leading forces of progress and peace in the contemporary world.
The development and growth of the world forces of socialism, peace and progress, the consistent policies of the Soviet Union and other socialist states are lessening global tension and diminishing the danger of a world war. The world is entering an era of implementing the Leninist idea of peaceful coexistence of states with differing political and social systems. July 1975. The inaugural address to the European Security and Cooperation Conference Summit in Helsinki was delivered by Finnish President Urho Kekkonen. He said then,
"Today is a day of joy and hope for Europe. We have full reason to believe that a new era has dawned in relations among us, and that through their talk we shall come nearer to stabilization."
Людям, принадлежавшим поколению, которое пережило ужасы Второй...
People who belong to the generation which went through the horrors of the Second World War see especially clearly the historic sense of the present conflict, Leonid Brezhnev told the Helsinki gathering of European leaders. Its objectives are close to the heart and minds of that generation of Europeans, he went on, who have grown up and who live in peace, who rightly believe that it should not be otherwise. The soil of Europe has been profusely soaked in blood shed in two world wars. The heads of state and government of 33 European countries, together with the United States and Canada, assembled in Helsinki to jointly work for transforming Europe into a continent which would be free of war. All nations must be assured the right to live in peace. Of course, we are also for guaranteeing such a right to all other nations in the world.
President Giscard d'Estaing
responds. Monsieur le Président, la conférence sur la sécurité et la coopération en Europe est déjà la conférence.
The conference on security and cooperation in Europe is the effect of over 10 years of détente. In fact, one cannot but be struck by the importance of the road covered in those 10 years, which has been stressed in the speeches delivered there. A road without which to write such speeches and to listen to them would have been impossible.
The Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe adopted a document of historic significance. It is often referred to as the Grand Charter of Peace.
Europe, the continent where two world wars were launched, is setting an example and offering a proposal of peaceful cooperation.
that the process of international détente benefits the socialist countries alone. But, as Leonid Brezhnev said recently, does peace harm other nations? Is there a nation which can expect to gain anything from a new world war in which all the contemporary means of mass annihilation would be employed? Of the world, spanning all strata of society. The most powerful states and governments must reckon with this movement. In UNESCO, the World Peace Council has been granted an A status, that is, the right to cooperate and consult within this grand United Nations specialized agency.
The scope of social forces working for peace is best evidenced by the fact that close on 3,200 delegates from 144 countries arrived at the latest World Congress of Peace Forces in Moscow. The Congress, held in 1973, was attended by representatives of 117 international and national organizations. Represented in Moscow were 1,100 political parties and 9 United Nations committees and commissions.
The appeal adopted by the Congress read in part:
"The World Congress of Peace Forces is the reaction of common people the world over to the existing dangers and injustices. It urges fresh efforts so that knowledge, labor, and the wealth of humanity could well serve the good of the human race, and not the annihilation and subjugation of man. To attain these objectives, national and international organizations should coordinate their efforts, aiming at mobilizing world public opinion as an effective instrument of peace."
At the beginning of February 1976, the Secretary General of the World Peace Council, Romesh Chandra, said in Warsaw,
"At this time, the most urgent task before the peace movement is, can be summed up in the phrase, to build up public opinion, to act, to make the entire process of détente an irreversible process. And to this end, the most important initiative that has been taken by the World Peace Council is the new Stockholm movement. This is a movement named after the new appeal to end the arms race. We believe that military détente is essential if détente is to be made an irreversible process. And therefore the campaign to obtain literally, we hope, hundreds of millions of signatures, of resolutions, of support to the new Stockholm appeal becomes the most important and immediate work throughout this year."
Over a quarter of a century ago, the call to oppose the threat of a nuclear annihilation was sounded from Stockholm.
Today, the second Stockholm appeal urges once again all people of goodwill to redouble efforts to strengthen and deepen détente in international relations.
Over a quarter of a century ago, the call to oppose the threat of a nuclear annihilation was sounded from Stockholm.
Today, the second Stockholm appeal urges once again all people of goodwill to redouble efforts to strengthen and deepen détente in international relations.
In that second appeal, we read,
the process of détente has opened up new prospects of victory in the struggle for a better international economic order, for the right of nations to the riches their lands hold. The process of détente makes it easier for nations to fight the aggressive maneuvers of monopolies and the supranational corporations.
The arms race is not finally governed by the imperialists, encouraged and abetted the forces of aggression, militarism, fascism, colonialism and racism. Détente is an essential factor in strengthening efforts aimed at attaining independence, justice and social progress in all countries.
Détente creates new opportunities for settling the most urgent international issues, to eliminate hotbeds of tension and stamp out the claims of conflict. The curbing of the arms race will open the way to attaining the great goals of humanity. A ban on the use of nuclear weapons and other mass annihilation arms, general and complete disarmament, and a world without weapons.
The World Peace Council appeals to all governments and parliaments, to all peace movements, to political parties, to trade unions, women's and youth organizations, to all religious, social, cultural institutions and other movements which are committed to the cause of mankind's progress to unite in the new great world offensive against the arms race. It all started in Wrocław in 1948. A movement was born then, the aim of which was to protect the world from total annihilation.
In 1977, in Warsaw, the World Assembly of Peacemakers will convene. The aim and substance of the debates will be to strengthen détente and also to make it irreversible.
The program was prepared by the external services of the Polish radio in Warsaw.